This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here as we cover lots of topics around the Umpqua Valley. A big one in the news this week: changes to prohibited camping and action by the Roseburg City Council on Monday night. Police Chief Gary Kloffenstein, City Manager Nikki Messenger. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
So I guess let's back up and talk about how this has evolved. A past court decision and then the more recent Supreme Court ruling, Nikki, has been kind of a shift to all this.
It has. There were two decisions out of the Ninth Circuit. One was referred to as Boise. One was referred to as Grants Pass. The Supreme Court refused to hear the Boise decision, but they did hear the Grants Pass decision in, I believe it was April, and in June came out with a decision that remanded the Grants Pass decision, but in the text of their decision, they also unwound many of the provisions that were decided in Boise.
And cities are reacting to this, I imagine, in different ways. Talk about what the council decided to do on Monday.
So on Monday, we had adopted time, place, and manner regulations. Those were required in the state of Oregon if you were going to regulate where people sit, sleep, lie. You had to have those adopted by July 1st of 2023. And so we had done that. The changes that we made on Monday night were primarily around the consequences if someone is violating those time, place, and manner restrictions. So before it was a civil violation, now that has changed. Gary's looking at me to make sure I'm getting this right. So it's got an escalating consequence now. The first violation is a $100 citation. The second one is $250. And the third one is up to 7 days in jail. There are provisions that allow the judge to take the situation, things that may be situationally impacted, such as if they cleaned up their camp right away when they were asked to. They're typically given the opportunity to do that. And there's also a kind of a diversion program that the chief put in place working with the judge a couple of years ago that allows people to seek help through ADAPT or another organization to help them put together steps that may help them lead to housing. And so if they follow through on those, the judge can dismiss the charges.
So the council made the decision Monday. When does it go into effect?
So 30 days from that decision, so it should be September 26th.
So, Chief, with RPD being down a number of staff, it seems like this is going to create more enforcement work. How do you pull that off?
We're already doing the work. If you're getting the press logs, you'll see we're writing those prohibited camping citations. There's just no impact behind them. They're not having an effect. And so this hopefully will put a little consequence and hold people accountable. So I don't think it's going to add any more work. It's different. It gives us a tool, gives us an ability to affect change better.
Now, I know somebody's going to ask about the fine structure and say, if you're homeless, if you're camping, do you really think they're going to pay the fine?
It was already $250 per prohibited camping citation prior to this change. And the answer is probably no. That's why there's additional penalty of potential incarceration up to 7 days. So we're just trying to affect change.
And does this tie in at all? Is there aspects to this? There's the downtown exclusion ordinance. Does this kind of impact with that?
Yeah, in 2018, when we got the Boise decision that said we could no longer criminalize prohibited camping, we removed that from the list of offenses that you could be excluded from in the core downtown area. We call that the enhanced law enforcement area. And so with this change on June 28th from the Supreme Court, we've put that back. We're now putting that back in as one of the offenses that can cause you to be excluded from the downtown area.
Now, does that just shift some of the issue to other parts of town, or what have you seen?
We we haven't seen that much prohibited camping in the downtown area recently. We've been working really hard on that, and so I think you'll see that has improved drastically from years past. I don't think it'll shift. It may shift people, but we're trying to affect change. And so if we can make anyone, motivate anyone or incentivize anyone to better their situation, we've won.
And Nikki, I know for Roseburg, for all really a lot of other cities in Oregon, this has been a big issue, not only in law enforcement, but just in other staff time and other things too.
Yeah, lots of staff time devoted each week to doing camp cleanups. The several departments impacted within the city, of course, the police department and our homeless liaison officer and community services officer spent a lot of time dealing with that. Also, a community development department, the compliance officer, and both the public works and parks crews contribute to what it takes to remove the amount of material that we're seeing left behind.
And there was a cleanup August 7th, and I saw in some notes that seemed pretty substantial.
They're all pretty substantial. That's just one I shared with the public. We're getting sometimes 4 20-yard dumpsters and shocking tons of debris that we're picking up. And so as Nikki mentioned, we're using backhoes and big pieces of equipment to try to help us for force multipliers to clean this up.
And I noticed, when I think about 20,000 pounds of trash and a backhoe and all of that, that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. There's a lot of personnel that are on each one of these cleanups. There's a lot of logistics. There's a lot of the front end report. Every one of those camps that we post 50 camps for abatement, for cleanup. That's a police report. That's 50 reports. And then we have to take photographs of the camp in its state. We have to come back later and clean it up. And then we have to book the evidence and finish off the report. It is a lot of work.
You have one liaison officer to work in this area. Obviously, he can't do that all.
No, and we recently provided him with a non-sworn community service officer, and she is very helpful. So having an extra set of hands to help write those reports and do some of the other stuff has freed him up a little bit to start addressing some of the shopping carts and some of the other things that he's been working on trying to affect change.
And Nikki, one of the things too people talk about, aside from some of those issues, is just the damage to the areas near the South Umpqua River. You know, you used to just stroll down the multi-use path, and then you see a lot of damage that came from this stuff.
Yeah, so the other thing that we did on Monday night, council did on Monday night, was adopt an ordinance that prevents people from having certain things on their person in the parks, because if you are a regular parks user and you're just strolling through the park, you don't need a shovel, you don't need a machete, you don't need carpentry tools. So the things that we see with axes and saws and things that are damaging the trees, damaging the ground, people are digging caves and doing different things. We needed a better way to capture that behavior and prohibit it. And one of the ways to do that is to prohibit those things from being in our parks, because unless you are a volunteer and you've been approved to do some things within the parks, or you're an employee or a police officer or some other authorized person, there's no reason that you need those things on your person in the parks. And so that's a new step that we took too. It also included certain weapons. You don't need a bullwhip. You don't need, there's lots of things that are not recreational in nature that we have received complaints about. And so we are trying to address those.
And have other cities had to take that kind of action with these weapons and these different things?
I'm not certain. I didn't do a whole lot of research into what other cities had. We're a little unique in our trail system and our bike paths, and every city has its own challenges in that respect. And so I did copy a little. I don't even remember what city it was. Maybe it was Hillsboro. I'm not sure. I did copy a little bit of this language from another city. We pilfered some or plagiarized some, but I'm not certain.
It seems, some of the things that you run into, your officers run into, you don't know what somebody's intention is with it. So then that kind of immediately gets your radar up.
Yeah, That's definitely there's definitely safety concerns. And you come up with someone and they got a sword or a 3 foot machete, maybe not 3 foot, but a 20-30 inch machete on their side, and they're, if they're aggressive, that definitely presents a different set of circumstances for them to have to deal with.
All right, we're going to talk more about this when we come back. The interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming up at 1. On tomorrow's program, we're going to talk with Allie Rogers of the Umpqua Valley Wine Growers Association and Rob Icola, one of the vintners, about a special harvest tour event that the wine growers have coming up next month. And we're talking to Roseburg Police Chief Gary Kloffenstein, Roseburg City Manager Nikki Messenger, about the issue of prohibited camping and some shifts made by the City Council this week, as well. The council and staff has been talking back and forth for a number of months, probably over a year or maybe two now, about the potential for a designated city-owned or city-overseen campground. Does that ordinance, or not ordinance, does that Supreme Court action kind of shift what you're thinking there?
So there's differing views on the council, and they are planning to talk about it at their next meeting, whether or not to proceed with looking for a campsite or not. We've looked at several. We've brought a few of them forward publicly. We haven't landed on one. But all of the advice that we get from anybody we talk to is that those things should be managed, and that comes with a pretty hefty price tag. So that's the balancing point, is how to do it safely for the city residents, the residents that would be living there in the short term as they make their way through the system to get housed, and how to do it right if we do it. And so that's still a decision that is on council's radar.
Now, we talked about this a little bit, but maybe we can go deeper earlier. Municipal code changes talked about adding consequences for noncompliance to encourage offenders to get treatment and support from ADAPT through a diversion program. Are they ready to deal with a higher level of folks that might be wanting that help, or that they would be contacting about potentially receiving that help?
So my understanding is that ADAPT typically has somebody at the court on the days that these hearings are held. And so they're available. If somebody is ready to make a plan, they can make an appointment. But it doesn't have to just be ADAPT. They can work through the Navigation Center and work through UCAN on what services they may need. Sometimes it's something as simple as working towards getting their ID back so they can start applying for whether it's housing, whether it's employment, whether it's benefits. That they lay out a plan and start taking steps towards that plan is really the intent. It's not, you know, it's not meant to be a super high bar, but it's meant to get them moving towards a plan.
Chief, do you see, when you contact folks, I mean, is a lot of this still related to either mental health and or substance use?
We see a lot of both of those, yes. And kind of what we're seeing largely now is we're seeing people just camping and living. And so if people are homeless, truly homeless, and they need help, social services, the city, we're falling over ourselves trying to help them and get them to services and to better themselves. We're seeing a large portion now that just want to live, and they just want to camp, and they just want that to be their lifestyle. And so we're now having to try to incentivize that group and try to motivate that group to better themselves in some way, to try to get housing.
And is that similar to what you're hearing from other police chiefs in other cities?
Very similar. We have almost every time we meet, this is one of the big conversations we have. I was even talking to a chief in Tennessee recently, and I was asking him how it was going down there, and they have a surprise, they have a very large a problem with camping in their city, and so it's everywhere.
So is it a rarity now to find a city that doesn't really have that problem?
There are cities that don't have as much problem, and that's usually cities that are around other larger cities who have all the social services. So if there's the cities that don't offer the social services or maybe more outliers, they don't tend to have as much problems with that, but it's pretty prevalent everywhere.
So you'd pass an ordinance that'll take effect in 30 days from Monday. At the same time, we've got a shift going into effect, I think, over the weekend in Oregon's laws regarding a kind of a revamp of Measure 110, I guess is a way to put it. Do you feel like that's going to help too?
Yes, I think the help is going to be a little delayed. So that's House Bill 4002. And that's the legislature's attempt to fix some of the challenges that came about from about Measure 110, where drugs were essentially legalized or decriminalized, I should say, and they became just a violation for a user amount of drugs. And with this change now, they've created in the statute a deflection program or the option for deflection programs, and they really tried to encourage agencies to do that. The Roseburg Police Department's not going to do that. When we find someone with user amounts of drugs, we are going to arrest them, take them to court, there's some programs that happen through this House bill behind the scenes that I'm not sure about and how that works. But the long-term effect is we'll start seeing some people that have chronic drug problems getting back on probation, being held accountable, having to give UAs, having to live in a stable place. And so all that's going to have an effect. I don't think that happens quickly. The court systems aren't fast inherently. So it's going to take a little while for us to feel that effect. But I'm hopeful that there will be some change and we will have an impact.
I would think as well, I mean, the district attorney's offices and folks like that talk about shortages and a lot of other things that they're already struggling with. And now with the caseload goes up again.
Yeah, it's going to definitely add a little burden to them. In the statute, this is one of those that cannot go through our municipal court. It has to go through a circuit court. So it will go to the district attorney for prosecution. I recently met with him, and they are going to be filing on these. So we're going to start seeing some people back on probation that really need it. If they were going to change on their own, we would already see them changing, and they're not. So they need someone to hold them accountable, help them get to where they need to be to hopefully affect a long-term change.
So is this change also helping you at all yet, or do you think it will in recruiting officers? Because I know you had a number of folks that kind of over time got very frustrated and walked away.
I don't know if it will. I hope it will. I know we had one officer leave a while ago, and that officer's main what they really enjoyed was drugs and getting drugs off the streets, and with Measure 110 they felt like they were really stymied, and so that was a frustration, and they went back to their previous employment. So I'm not sure if it will. It's just another tool that's going to be helpful for us. So I think that's encouraging.
And Nikki, for the city staff, we've got about a minute left on Inside Douglas County. How do you see this helping in other areas of trying to run a city?
So I think that by taking away that decriminalization of drugs, it's going to have impacts citywide, not just within the park system where we're seeing some of that usage occur. The thing about Douglas County is it has a drug court, it has a mental health court. Once we get people into that system, there's residential substance abuse treatment within the jail. There's options available, but right now people are not getting into that system because of the fact that it was decriminalized.
And do we think we're going to see a big change in the next year? Or do you think this is going to be slow moving?
I think it will be a little bit slow moving just because of the lack of prosecutors and defense attorneys in the system. But give it time. It took time to get to where we're at, and it's going to take us time to get back out of where we're at.
Police Chief Gary Klopfenstein, City Manager Nikki Messenger, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.